9 at Radio Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with music and the truth until dawn. Right now, I got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. It's 12 o'clock, Americans, another day closer to victory. And for all of you out there on or behind the lines, this is your song.
Now you cut that fence and get this platoon on the move!
Well, listen, you crummy, flat-footed copper. I'll show you whether I lost my nerve and my brains.
Man, we like to feel that we can get out of trouble quicker than we got into it.
I'm not fighting for anything anymore except myself. I'm the only cause I'm interested in.
All right, let's get this going on. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. This is your host, TJ Martinell, the Mountain Pass Podcast. Coming to you from a homestead somewhere in the heart of Cascadia, the date is August 14th, 2021. And this is my third version of this podcast because I recorded two other This is why the podcast is late for those of you who were, you know, constantly like refreshing the SoundCloud page or refreshing my webpage. DJ, when are you going to get the podcast out? It's going to come out when I'm ready for it to come out. So I recorded two different versions of a podcast and I sat on it and just didn't like it. I didn't like the... you know, there's some stuff where I just don't necessarily want to talk about it on a podcast yet. Maybe some other time. Maybe I just need to get some stuff off my chest. But that's kind of how it is. So instead, I'm officially, not officially moved out. I am moved out of my fortress and it is on the cusp of being basically having a house sale. Like the sales, there's a sale that is going to occur in the near future. So happy about that. Didn't take it long to get an offer. So that was partly what I was going to talk about in short, but not necessarily in terms of kind of what was next. And that's where I was like, you know what? Who knows? Instead, we're going to talk about something a little less about my life, because I'm sure you guys are all just excited to hear about the latest adventures. The thing I'm going to talk about at this juncture, whatever it's called. Who cares? I'm a writer. I should know words. Actually, let's pause. I'm acting like a little bit of a dog. Squirrel. My book, The Iridian, has come out today on Kindle. It's going to be out in paperback at some point. It's going through the review process. You will like this book. It is a blend of Casablanca, The Maltese Falcon, and Star Wars. So if you like any of those, you will enjoy this book. So go get it. It's on Amazon. I'm really proud of the way it came out. I'm very, very happy with the cover. I'm really happy with just the way that the story structure worked. Everything seemed to just flow appropriately. This was not a book that I had to do massive re-edits with. But I think that that's also speaking to where I'm at as a writer, where I don't have to spend a lot of time redoing stuff. I can pretty much have an idea of what I'm going to do. I just do a little... I understand story structure. I understand character development and a lot of these things that before, as a amateur writer, I didn't fully grasp. So... and if you buy the, you will buy the book, but when you buy the book and read it and you will enjoy it, you will love it. Leave a review on Amazon. I did a podcast. This must've been a couple years ago on, conspiracy theories. And it suddenly occurred to me, I think conspiracy theories are interesting. Like I'm kind of fascinated by some of the stuff that people put out there as to all these different things. But, you know, I'm getting to the point where I feel like conspiracy theories are actually not good. And for reasons that are atypical to what you will hear from most people. So what is a conspiracy theory? A conspiracy theory is essentially a alternative explanation for a historical event. It claims it is a counter narrative to the official narrative put out by the government. So, you know, like, let's say there's a conspiracy theory about, you know, I'll use a very non-controversial one because nobody even hardly ever knows about it, but the USS Maine that was blown up, that blew up in Cuba, and that triggered the Spanish-American War. You know, a conspiracy theory could have been that that ship was blown up on purpose to instigate a war. Or, you know, I'm trying to think of some other type of conspiracy theory that, I mean, the classic ones have to do with JFK's assassination and other stuff. So I think that that's essentially what a conspiracy theory is. The government says XYZ. The conspiracy theory says it's XY or ZY or XZ. Whatever it is, it claims that there is an alternative explanation for what actually happened. But the problem with that, this is where it gets to be a problem, is that when the mainstream official narrative for a event is, let's say, ABC, there's a variety of different things that you can do with that. You can accept it, you can reject it, or you can reject it and offer an alternative explanation. The most powerful one is to just simply say, I would say also skepticism. I think that that's probably, being skeptical is more effective and defensible and rhetorically safer than being a dissident or being a conspiracy theorist. And I'll explain why. So, let's say somebody comes up to you and they say, I'll give an example. Let's say someone comes up to you and says, do you believe in climate change? There's different answers you can give. You can say yes, you can say no, or you can say, I don't know. Now, the people who say no and say I don't know are both will easily rile up the climate change activist people, the believers, but they can't really attack someone who says I don't know, because they aren't asserting an opinion. They aren't saying this is what you need. They're not trying to foist an opinion or a belief onto other people. They're simply saying, well, I don't know. So they're not coming off as hostile or opposing or a threat to the official narrative directly. See, this is where it's very effective to play the Socrates, you know, thing. I know that I don't know. Whereas somebody says, no, I don't believe in it, and I think they offer a conspiracy theory. Now, they may not be wrong, but it's the reason why saying I don't know is more effective is that you aren't required to defend anything. You don't have, if somebody says, well, what do you mean you don't know? Just say, I don't know. Well, how can you not know at this point? And it says, well, and the person can reply, well, you can start to employ the logic. Like, what is it? Why should I believe in it? And then they have to go through all that stuff. And then you can start asking them questions. See, you are the one who's asking the questions and listening to them defend their belief. Whereas if you are offering a conspiracy theory or an alternative explanation or argument, you have to defend that argument. Or like someone who says, like, let's go with the COVID thing. You know, COVID vaccines. Do you think the COVID vaccines are safe? I don't know. Well, how can you not know? Well, what is it like? Why? What information is out there that tells me that this thing is safe? Or they'll say, oh, you think vaccines are unsafe? I don't know if they're deadly. I don't know if they're perfectly safe. I don't know. Right? So they, again, I'm throwing out examples. So this is where just saying, I don't know, you don't have to say anything else. You really don't have to offer much of an explanation in part of this discussion. It's still all on them. Conspiracy theories allow those who promote the official narrative to tie all rejection of their narrative to an alternative narrative. So if you don't believe what we say, it's because you believe what these people think. When it comes to a variety of historical events, if you don't believe the official narrative, it's because you're a denier. You reject it. Whatever it is. Let's go back to the climate change thing for a second. You know, they say they're a climate skeptic. That's not rhetorically powerful. Saying they're a climate denier. See, that's far more powerful than saying they're a skeptic, because skeptic implies I'm open to changing my mind if sufficient evidence is presented in front of me. That emotionally doesn't rile people up the way that saying, oh, they're a denier, where they've seen the evidence and they've rejected it. This is why whenever I see conspiracy theories being thrown out over stuff, it's like, look, if this thing is, I know this thing's wrong. Okay, we're going to use a much more controversial example. Someone says, you know, do you think the election, the 2020 election was fraudulent? Someone could say, yes, I believe it was fraudulent. Well, how was, like, you know, you believe that all this other stuff happened? It's like, no, you can say, I believe the 2020 election, presidential election, was fraudulent. That is the results were through fraud, without having to say, here's how it happened. It kind of reminds me of this scene from the movie Midway, which was a really good film. I didn't really necessarily love it at first, but now I really like it the more I watch it. It came out in 2019. You should watch it. It's probably one of the last great American films that will ever get made. But there's a scene where Admiral Nimitz, he's in charge of the Pacific Fleet. He's meeting with this intelligence officer who's a cryptologist or something like that. They've cracked the Japanese code and they've decoded stuff. And their claim is that the theory, the thesis they have is that the Japanese are going to attack the U.S. Base on this small island called Midway, obviously where the title of the movie comes from. And Nimitz says, do you have any direct proof? And the intelligence officer looks at him like, what are you talking about? He goes, no, we don't. But, and then he goes to give an example of where, you know, there's a wedding on an island. You don't know, you haven't seen the invitation, but you know that the local band's been booked and there's a venue that's been RSVP'd and the food caterers have all been are preparing big orders. Like, that tells you things that you can know just by clues. So you don't have to know something directly to know that something did happen. You don't have to know how something happened. Going back to the point I was making, you don't have to argue about how something happened. Like, for example, someone says, this is a more simplistic one, but they say, do you believe the Titanic sank? Well, yeah. Do you know how it sank? Well, if somebody's not as historically inclined, they would say, well, they wouldn't be able to say, yeah, it hit an iceberg and the first four compartments flooded completely and that was too much. And so it sank. Like, someone should not have to provide an explanation precisely in terms of engineering and physics of why the Titanic sank, to know and be able to say that it sank. Like, we don't have to provide the exact, like, how I'm trying to think of Like Davy Crockett. I was just reading a book on Davy Crockett. I was rereading this book called The Lion of the West. We don't know how Davy Crockett died. He could have been executed after surviving the siege of the Alamo. He could have died alongside his men shot in the head. Like or he could have been bayoneted. We don't know how he died. We just know that he did die there. So with the whole election fraud example, someone will say, well, how was the election stolen? Say, I don't know how it was stolen or fraudulent. I just know that it was. And then you can provide some indications of things that say to you it was fraudulent. Like, I don't have direct proof, but here are things that strongly suggest that fraud was involved. And so you're avoiding having to give specific examples of how something happened. As opposed to saying, oh, well, there was this system, there was this, you know, they're counting ballots in this place, and they did specifically, they added ballots in these counties, and there was ballots, like all, I don't know exactly how fraud would work. I don't fully understand how the voting system works. I saw so much information that was just like mind-bogglingly contradictory that I just was like, look, I don't know, me personally, this is me speaking my opinion, I don't know what happened specifically. I just know what the outcome was. So people are coming up with all these crazy things about conspiracy theories to just say, I don't know the specifics. I'm just looking at the results. So this, again, goes back to my point that conspiracy theories are often actually counterproductive. And frankly, you got to wonder how many of them are created by people who are promoting the official narrative to discredit the opposition. Because if you're just skeptical, that you're in a very defensible, you have the high ground, right? You're up on the ridge, they're down below, they got to come up to meet you. As opposed to you now having to say that, you know, that you're like, I'm trying to think of another conspiracy. Like, do I believe JFK was assassinated? Like there was a conspiracy involved. Well, I don't know exactly who killed him. I know that there was a conspiracy to cover up who killed him. We know, like, there's no doubt at all that there was a conspiracy to kill him or to cover it up. Because, and I don't remember all the details, but there was a high-ranking government official who sent out a memo that said, well, one, okay, let's stop for the first thing. The car that Kennedy was shot in was immediately taken to a car factory in Detroit or something like that and refurbished before any kind of forensic evidence could be gathered from the car. Excuse me. It's my COVID, guys. And the other thing is that there was a the local county coroner or whatever they have that was doing the autopsy. He was interrupted by federal we know this stuff happened. This is not even debatable. Federal agents came in and removed him and took over the autopsy. And the coroner said when he saw the body next, there had been changes made to it. So, yes, there was a conspiracy to cover up who was involved in Kennedy's assassination. I don't know anything other than that. I'm just saying there's no reason for them to cover up or mess with the autopsy, and there's absolutely no excuse for taking the car where the president was assassinated in and have it refurbished that weekend. There was also a memo put out by a government official, and I can't remember exact. Jesse Ventura wrote a book on it, and he discussed it on that one Limey's show. I can't remember his name. He's not important. But he's talking about how this government official sent out this memo saying that there needed to be a committee set up within Congress to investigate the assassination, and that it needed to convey to the American public two things: that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, and that he if he was put on trial, he would be convicted. Like, that was the two things that they, the conclusions of, like, and this is before they've looked at any evidence. So that is something that can be easily argued in favor of that claim. Like, there was a conspiracy. I don't think that anyone could call that a conspiracy theory. It's pretty solid that there was a, like, that is evidence of a cover-up. But I think it creates this binary way of thinking where if you don't believe A, you must believe B. Well, in some cases, yes. Like, if you believe someone didn't kill someone, then you believe that, like, let's say somebody was murdered, right? Like, you're investigating a crime. If you believe this person, either they did it or they didn't do it. And if they did do it, then, no, you know, unless you have proof that there was other people involved, like, other people are innocent. I'm trying to think of a more effective example. Like, either somebody did something or they didn't do something. Okay, that's a correct way of thinking in a binary sense. Like, you're a parent. You go to your kid. You say, like, either, you know, like, let's say somebody ate all the cookies in the cookie jar. I'm giving a really kind of archaic example. Either they did do it or they didn't do it. So this is why I as much as I enjoy listening to conspiracy theories, I think they're kind of fascinating. Oh, actually, let me throw out another example of why I'm skeptical of conspiracy theories, because you know, there was the whole UFO thing back in the 50s, and there was claims that there was aliens and, you know, Area 51 or whatever, and it turns out that what they thought were UFOs was actually some sort of top secret Air Force project where they were trying to detect Soviet nuclear tests, and one of them had crashed, or it was like a balloon or something like that. And one of the reasons why they didn't really, well, one, because it was top secret, the government had no incentive to counter the claim that it was UFOs. Like, that was easy for them. They just said, yeah, sure. They didn't really argue against it because it served a purpose. It provided a conspiracy theory masked the truth. So this is where I look at a lot of things, and people will say, like, there's the official narrative, and then there's the mainstream, not mainstream, but like the prevailing conspiracy theory, the alternative explanation. And my thought is, I don't believe either. I think that the conspiracy theorists are often right in challenging the prevailing narrative. I just don't think that their counter narrative is correct either. So another thing I wanted to talk about on the podcast, I've been thinking about this, is there is this growing, I don't even know what word to use to describe it, but the control freak mother-in-law that is going on in this country. And there's an easy way to determine whether, this goes back to the narrative thing, you know, the official narrative on stuff. There is an easy way to determine whether or not it's false. Because the false narratives, the false claims always fit a particular pattern. They have certain criteria that if you notice, you will notice them in every single one of them. There is a crisis on an apocalyptic level. There's something that urgent, that it's urgent. It has to be dealt with right now. We can't wait. We have to deal with it right now. And the world is going to end if we don't. They don't say, this is where it's so nefarious, guys. They will never say that specifically. But, and I've been having so many arguments with people who don't get this, and it's really frustrating me. People don't, let me put it this way. How many kids have been told that COVID-19 might kill them? Probably not a lot. Specifically, explicitly that way. How many of them probably have been taught or the way, how many of these kids have logically concluded that this virus could kill them? Probably a lot. Because the way they are being treated is the way you treat people who are at risk of dying from a virus. I'll give an example. Let's say I had kids, and I woke them up at 3 a.m. in the morning and said, quick, get your clothes on. We got to get out of here. Right? And then I took them all and, you know, like it was very urgent to get out of the house. Like, we have to get out of the house right now. And then the kid's assumption was something like the house is on fire. There's an earthquake. Like, their physical safety is predicated on them getting out of the house. And then they're all getting out of the house, and essentially they ask, like, what's wrong? Like, where's the fire? And I say, well, what fire? Well, why are you waking us up at 3 a.m. in the morning and telling us to get our clothes on and get out of the house as quickly as possible? Like, what is the purpose of that? So it's always done, I guess this is the criteria, it's said in very abstract ways. The rhetoric is incredibly evasive in describing, like when someone says, you know, climate change is an existential threat to our very existence. What does that mean? Because it used to be called global warming. Now, see, it got ambiguous. It used to be specific. Global warming, meaning the earth is warming up. Then they call it climate change because any change in the climate is climate change, and climate change is an existential threat to our very existence. So any change in the weather of any kind, like no matter what, you can't lose. And a certain group, here's another criteria that just for when you're spotting this kind of stuff, a certain group of people have the solution. We have the prescription. We have the plan. We're going to fix this. We're going to save the world. We're going to stop things from happening, right? It's always a specific group of people in a specific group. And if you're not in the group, then you don't have the solution. And there are, and it's very specific. Any solution they have will always involve a certain group of people having greater control over your life, but you won't get to decide or control anything in their lives. So, for example, let's go back. You know, I did that podcast on the COVID thing. They get to decide whether or not I have to muzzle up, and they're increasingly getting to the point where they're going to say when people need to be forced to jab an experimental vaccine, not even a vaccine, experimental, whatever you want to call it, I have no idea, but vaccines make you immune. If it doesn't make you immune, it's not a vaccine. To put something into your body that has not actually been officially approved by the FDA to make them safe. I, however, do not get to pull the donut out of their mouth or prevent them from drinking high fructose corn syrup drinks or prevent them from eating highly processed foods or stop them from going to McDonald's every day. See, they get to tell me what to do to protect their health and safety. I don't get to tell them what to do to protect their health and safety. They have control over what I do to protect them. I can't control them to just protect them. And it's not enough. Let's pause for a second. I don't get to make up things or decide what they have to do to protect my health. See, it goes both ways. I don't get to say anything either way. I don't get to decide whether their restrictions on me is good for their health or not. And I don't get to decide what restrictions on them is good for their health. See, a certain group of people get to exert control over another group of people. And they also get to maintain their own autonomy. So this is going to be the key part, guys. This is where, if you want to know where all this stuff is going with the COVID thing or the climate change thing, whatever it is that the control freak mother-in-laws in this country have planned for you. Actually, you know what? We're gonna hit hard. We're gonna drop a bomb. We're gonna do a bombing run. They are absolutely going to force everyone to take this vaccine, and there is a reason for it. It has nothing to do with health. It has nothing to do with science. It is because they have promoted and internalized and believe a false perception of reality, which is that COVID-19 is a serious threat to the health of an average person. And that all these restrictions and lockdowns and muzzling everyone was necessary to keep everyone safe. And you need to take the vaccine or you're going to die. They don't say that. That's what they believe. So when you see people who, if you're a COVIDian and you see someone who isn't muzzled up and doesn't have the vaccine and is in good health and not dropping dead, they are a living contradiction and rejection of your perception of reality. Like, if you went around telling someone that anyone who doesn't wear a mask is going to drop dead, and then people don't drop dead because even though they're not wearing a mask, that is why they say everybody needs to wear a mask. Because if people were able to do what they wanted to do, there would be a countless number of people just walking around, their very existence being a contradiction to other people's perception of reality. And that's why they need everyone. Like, there's, I've given this example on other podcasts. It's, you know, it's like the, I don't have a good description of it. It's the Voight Kampff test in real life. If someone comes to you and says, like, you or a group of people like you are a problem, you cause conflict, you're making our lives worse, and you're, the way to test that perception of reality is to suggest that you separate yourselves, right? Whenever there's a conflict and it's not solvable, you separate. And when you suggest that, how do they respond? Like, if you're in a relationship with you're in a relationship with a girl and she's constantly telling you how you're a piece of crap and, you know, like just screaming at you, and then you suggest that you separate and she immediately has a meltdown and starts crying and getting upset, clearly she knows, like, her actions are saying that you are not the problem. Because if you were, she would be happy. First of all, she would have broken up with you. But she's not breaking up with you because you're not the problem. She has a false perception of reality that you would destroy by leaving her. Because if she has problems in her life, guess what? They're her fault, not yours. And it's the same thing with this vaccine. It's when you have millions of people who are not vaccinated and they're just carrying on with their lives, they are passively thumbing their noses at all these COVIDians who believe that it's absolutely necessary and good and for good health, or something bad is going to happen. The message being conveyed is something bad will happen to you if you don't muzzle up, and something bad will happen to you if you don't take the vaccine. And it's a way of controlling someone, right? This is narcissistic behavior. If you don't do exactly what I tell you to do, something bad's going to happen to you. Okay, I'm not going to do it. And if they're allowed to not do it, it's going to, it contradicts their argument that something bad happens to you. This is why they need to force everyone to do it, so that no one can say, well, I didn't take the vaccine and I'm fine. But of course, they're arguing this from the perspective of, you need to do this to keep me safe. Well, you know what? How about we, and I love how there now even there's talk of camps, you know, quarantine people. How about we quarantine all the COVIDians so that we can get on with our lives? You know, if you're so afraid of life, we have places where you don't have to ever interact with us. And you're fed and you're taken care of. It's called prison. But this is where you can, like the criteria I just outlined, apocalyptic narrative, we have to deal with this now, a certain group of people have the solution, it always involves them having control and power over your life and your choices, and you don't get to control them. And they do everything possible to prevent you from being able to make choices that contradict a narrative of theirs, which is, if you don't do what we say, bad things will happen to you. And then you go do those things and bad things don't happen to you. They can't allow that. They can't allow an entire group of people to not be vaccinated. So when you, we're talking about vaccine passports. Guys, we didn't have vaccine passports for the polio or smallpox or measles or mumps. Well, TJ, everybody took the vaccine. That's because they were actual public health crises. I remember watching this movie when I was a kid where this Indian, his tribe is dealing with smallpox, and he goes over, he's trying to seek medicine for his tribe. And he goes into this white settlement and he mentions the word smallpox, and everybody freaks out because they're like, is this guy contaminated with smallpox? Because it'll wipe out your entire village. Somebody gets polio, yes, good chance that they are going to be paralyzed, right? Somebody gets COVID, a normal, healthy person. We're talking about normal, healthy people. Because guess what, guys? If you are clinically obese or you have some underlying health condition, like AIDS doesn't kill anybody, technically. I mean, if we're going to be autistically retarded, nobody dies of AIDS. They die of their immune system's lowered to the point where something else kills them. The Spanish flu did not kill people. It lowered people's immunity, it made them vulnerable for something else to kill them. But it's kind of like if somebody smokes cigarettes for 50 years and then gets lung cancer. We don't really say they died of lung cancer. We say they died of lung cancer after a lifetime of smoking, because we're contextualizing the circumstances of their death. It's like if somebody dies of cirrhosis and then not mentioning that they drank heavily for 40 years. So this is just what's the reality that's going to happen. In some, I mean, Biden's already talking about trying to impose this stuff from I hate talking about politics, but it's like, I'm sorry, but politics control everything now is everyone's business. And the moment my life and my freedoms are at stake, it's like, I don't have a choice. And the biggest thing here, here's where it gets really dumb, is when people say, well, you know, is it really that big of a deal? You know, it's just with the mask. It's just a piece of cloth. Yeah. And when Xerxes sent a messenger to Sparta, to Leonidas, the messenger only asked for earth and water. He wasn't just asking for earth and water in a literal sense, you autistic spurs. He was demanding symbolic tribute that the earth and water of Sparta, the land itself, belonged to Xerxes. It was a symbolic act of submission to Xerxes. Which is why Leonidas kicked the guy into a local well and said, you'll find plenty of it down there. But nobody, like, and then they later went to war over it. It's like, no idiot would say, we fought this war just because he wouldn't give them water, you know, a little bit of water and dirt. Like, no idiot would say that. But that's what people say about the mask. It's like, it's not just about the mask. It's the same thing. Xerxes demanded earth and water. A government demands you wear a mask. The same thing. They represent the exact same thing. Let's not be... I'm tired of dealing with people who are complete... I'm running out of words in the English language to describe the level of stupidity, the level of delusion that people in this country, where they think things aren't the way they are. Yes, this is absolutely what's going on. And if you can't accept that, that sounds like a personal problem for you. The day is going to eventually come when the control freaks need to be controlled by people who just want to be left alone. I think that is a good note to end on. So you can go to my website, tjmartinell.com, and buy links to all my books, links to all my podcasts. You'll figure it out. So thank you for listening to the Mountain Pass Podcast. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from a homestead somewhere in the heart of Cascadia. Signing off.